AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on a Tuesday, we're joined by Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, as we'll be talking through some of the stories that they have been working on over at the Reformer. Again, make sure you go to their website, minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's start off with a big ruling that just happened in Ramsey County District Court, as this is a ruling that could expand abortion access in Minnesota. So Ramsey County District Judge Thomas Gilligan struck down laws related to parental notification, hospitalization, and mandated physician care and informed consent. So this is going to significantly expand abortion access in Minnesota, Patrick, and I imagine make us even more of kind of that island of abortion access among the Midwest when many other states in our area are actually restricting abortion access.
Right. This is a really important ruling, and coming just weeks after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, which created this patchwork of abortion regulations and, in some states, criminalization. Including here in the Midwest, Minnesota, being more progressive than our neighbors, has become kind of a safe haven, and now even more so with this ruling. We had some restrictions on abortion, and the judge overturned those, leaning on a 1995 precedent. Minnesota has kind of its own Roe v. Wade. It's called Doe v. Gomez, and that has codified a constitutional right to abortion, and it's actually more wide-ranging even than Roe was. And so the judge in this case has agreed with the plaintiffs and struck down a number of restrictions.
So it sounds like if this is appealed, the Attorney General's office could certainly play a big role, which means, I imagine, that whoever wins that office during the 2022 election season could play a role as to whether this ends up getting appealed to the appellate court and then possibly even the state Supreme Court, correct?
Yeah, this definitely puts Attorney General Keith Ellison in a little bit of an odd spot here because he's an abortion rights defender and has come out saying that he'll defend women from other states who come here to have an abortion. But his job as the Attorney General is to represent the state, be the state's lawyer in essence. And in this case, it was abortion rights groups that sued the state of Minnesota. And so he'll have to decide if he's going to appeal this case. And he's doing it in the heat of a very difficult re-election campaign.
And as of right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he has not made a decision yet on whether he will appeal that ruling from today that does expand abortion access in Minnesota. But I guess my other question would be in this case, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but I've heard of this happening in other states where sometimes you have an AG's office that doesn't want to defend a ruling, and oftentimes you can sometimes get someone from the other party to go ahead and defend that. Could that happen in Minnesota where someone, for instance, from the Republican Party could decide to defend that law rather than the Attorney General's office, or are we getting a little too far ahead on that case in terms of whether that could end up happening?
You stumped me on that. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine Ellison giving up this important legal authority on a case of this magnitude.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I've heard of that happening before in other states, so we'll have to see if that does end up being the case here in Minnesota. But for now, Ellison's office has not made a decision again on whether they will appeal that ruling. And sticking in the Attorney General's race, I know both candidates for Attorney General, at least the major party ones, Keith Ellison, of course, for the DFL, and Jim Scholz, who has the Republican endorsement, they held dueling press conferences yesterday, and they really seemed to make a point of contention about this idea of the number of criminal prosecutors in the office. Can you tell us about what both Scholz and Ellison were arguing during their press conferences in terms of criminal prosecutors? Because it sounds like Scholz was trying to say that Ellison's office does not have enough criminal prosecutors for cases right now throughout the state.
Yeah, I think the first thing to say about this is that the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota is the state's chief legal officer, not the state's chief law enforcement officer. That's a term that we often use for the United States attorney general, that he's the nation's chief law enforcement officer. That is not the case, at least in Minnesota. The attorney general of the state of Minnesota just doesn't prosecute that many crimes. Most crimes are going to be prosecuted by county prosecutors, and misdemeanors are prosecuted usually by city attorneys. So some of this is just a lot of smoke and mirrors. I understand why Schultz, the presumptive Republican nominee, would want to do this. Crime has been rising the last few years. It's an issue of some concern to a lot of Minnesotans. And so he's trying to highlight this, and the incumbent Attorney General Ellison is, since he's got elected, I mean, it has nothing to do with Ellison, but crime rates have risen. And so he's trying to make an issue out of this, and he's saying we're going to reallocate resources from other divisions in the office over to criminal prosecution. He says that there's currently only one prosecutor in the office. Ellison says, no, it's three, because I moved some people over, and I've been asking the legislature for more resources for more. I mean, to me, it's a little bit of a silly debate, because, again, the attorney general of the state of Minnesota, uses the bully pulpit, lobbies the legislature, it does prosecute some major felonies in counties that don't have the resources to do it. But these are very small counties. It's very rare. They do prosecute some fraud cases and so forth. But for the most part, the felony crimes that occur, they're going to be prosecuted by county attorneys. And so this debate to me seems really kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, and that's a good point to bring up, is that it's not the attorney general who's going to be prosecuting people who are, committing crimes in any area of the state. As you said, that's going to usually be the local district attorney. But Schultz certainly is making some political points out of this. And there was another thing I found interesting in what he talked about when he said he would like at least 30 more criminal prosecutors. And to get those 30 extra criminal prosecutors, he would be moving them from other areas, including consumer protection and antitrust matters, which of course would largely fit into something Republicans would like, where you could have fewer regulations and pressure on businesses in areas like consumer protection and antitrust matters. But if he's able to say, well, we can move these all over and make them criminal prosecutors, I suppose that can make good politics, but not necessarily the best policy. So yeah, certainly, as you talked about, definitely making some political points here with Jim Schultz and trying to highlight this issue as he tries to run his campaign against Ellison.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually not a good idea, because the attorney general of the state of Minnesota doesn't need 30 prosecutors.
Yeah.
Like I said, felonies are being prosecuted by county attorneys. But he also mentioned, I think he used the word harassment to refer to some of the attorney general's oversight of businesses. And of course, Schultz is a corporate attorney. So what he's at least nodding to is the idea that we're going to have less oversight, less regulatory rigor when it comes to businesses, and that doesn't sound like a particularly good idea to me. Maybe it does to him and his corporate allies. But if you're going to put all those resources into criminal prosecutions, that means you're taking away from something else.
And I know one final point of contention between the two had to do with gun laws, where Attorney General Keith Ellison does want to strengthen gun laws in Minnesota and make sure that they do get prosecuted by his office. Meanwhile, Jim Schultz says the laws we have on the books are sufficient right now and we don't need to take any action. Is that largely kind of the point of the contention they were talking about as well on guns? Because I know that was another big topic that they discussed yesterday, or not discussed, but at least had in their dueling press conferences.
Yeah, Schultz, being the Republican endorsed candidate, is obviously against any and all new gun regulation, whereas Ellison has a history going to Congress. But yesterday, this was with Congresswoman Betty McCollum calling for just stronger gun laws. So that was another difference. Ellison really tried to capitalize on Schultz's tough political spot there, where, how can you really be tough on crime when you're unwilling to talk about the easy access to guns? And that's the point that he drove home yesterday.
We're speaking with Patrick Kulikhin, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com. Great reporting on the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Final story I'd like to talk with you about has to do with Allina being ordered to pay $400,000 to unions, or to their union, and they face many more anti-labor complaints. This is an article written by Max Nesterak. So basically what happened is that the union representing Allina's maintenance and service staff, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota, won a big victory this month when an arbitrator ruled that the healthcare system must pay about $400,000 in restitution for halting the collection of union dues after the labor contract had expired. So Allina argued that the National Labor Relations Board ruled back in 2019 that a company was not obligated to collect dues for a union after a labor contract expired, which was the case between Allina and the SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. But what exactly did the arbiter say in this case that is now going to force Allina to pay that $400,000 to the union?
Yeah, so what was happening was they stopped, after the contract was over, they stopped collecting union dues out of people's contracts. And what that required was that the members would just have to pay dues to the union. And you can imagine what a logistical nightmare that is, both for the workers and for the union. The arbitrator ruled that was a labor violation. So now Allina is going to have to pay that out of its own pockets. And then the union will be able to pay restitution or pay back the workers. So it's a case of real hardball tactics on the part of Allina, because what they do is they kind of starve the union of money, but they also create division between if the union dues aren't coming out of your paycheck and you have to go pay your union dues yourself, well, what ends up happening is some people aren't going to pay, and it creates real division in the union. So it's a shrewd hardball tactic on the part of Allina. But thankfully, a mediator said this isn't right, and they're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, and this definitely sounds like a tactic that really could kneecap a number of unions, as you said, where this would certainly cause some problems, I think, among union members, as you brought up. But it is good news, at least for the union's perspective, that the arbitrator did rule in their favor, so the union will be able to get those $400,000 payments from Allina. But the other aspect of this is that it sounds like this is not the first time SEIU Healthcare Minnesota has had issues with the management at Allina. As I know in the second part of the article, Max cites some different complaints the SEIU has filed with Allina, and the union brings up that similar healthcare companies in Minnesota don't have nearly the number of issues. So walk us through some of the complaints that SEIU Healthcare Minnesota has had with Allina over the past few months and years.
So SEIU points to 30 labor complaints in a single year against Allina with the National Labor Relations Board, which is the federal agency that oversees labor management relations in the private sector. These range from they didn't pay merit pay raises for therapists who unionized, which led to the Allina agreed to pay back pay to the workers. They moved an office of Phillips Eye Institute into a different campus, and then said that the dozen surgical technicians that were moved were no longer covered by the union contract. The NLRB determined Allina was wrong to stop honoring the workers' union contract. And there's actually a trial in that case for the fall. There's another complaint that Allina did not bargain in good faith on a first contract with mental health workers. I think we're familiar with that that situation from this spring. So just a number of complaints of unfair labor practices, which I'm afraid that we're going to see a fair amount of in in healthcare, especially given the difficult conditions that that both healthcare workers and healthcare management faces in the wake of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely agree, especially when you look at the staffing shortages that hospitals and healthcare providers are experiencing right now, that is going to force workers to probably end up doing more work, which, of course, could make conditions less than ideal for them and could lead to more conflict, as you were talking about, between management and unions. And certainly in this case of Allina, does not look like the end of litigation and lawsuits that we're going to see between the union and Allina, as we'll likely see more of those in the coming months and years. Well, we are just about out of time. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Again, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett. Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.